the life and legacy of NBA Commissioner David Stern. We'll reflect on both today from the newsroom of Sports Business Journal. I'm Bill King, and this is First Look. So we like to talk about Mount Rushmores in sports, right? We talk about Mount Rushmores of coaching, all sorts of Mount Rushmores. If you had a Mount Rushmore of sports commissioners, I'd argue that Judge Landis from baseball, on there for sure. Pete Rozelle in the NFL, on there for sure. You're going to have four. I think the next debate, and it might be a spirited one, maybe Paul Tagliabue, maybe Bud Selig. One there would be no debate on is David Stern. I don't think there's any question when you look at his life, his legacy. David Stern is on the Mount Rushmore of sports commissioners. We lost David Stern on New Year's Day. In to talk about him, his life, and his legacy is our NBA writer, John Lombardo, who's spent a lot of time covering the league, a lot of time covering David J. Stern. Certainly the whole sports world was shaken on New Year's Day. Not that it was particularly surprising. Certainly he had the brain hemorrhage on December 12th. And so you knew that it was touch and go from that point on. But to have it actually happen, I think really, and just from the few people that I spoke to, really, really shook people and brought back lots of memories. John, you did a wonderful job of capturing those in this week's issue. Tell me a little bit about that as you started to, let's start there, and then we'll talk all about David Stern. But to begin, the that day as you reached people, what did you hear?
I heard, like you said, Bill, it wasn't unexpected, but it was still, to some people, you know, hit them hard. And yeah. You know, David was a mentor to many, right? So some of the people we talked to were deeply influenced by David. So, you know, his death, though it wasn't necessarily unexpected, it still had impact, you know, clearly. So, you know, there's a lot of people who were very, you know, retrospective and kind of really thought back on how David had influenced and shaped, pushed, mentored, you know, just the impact that he had on their careers and, you know, their lives as people as well. So it was interesting to talk to these people. Obviously, some of them were retrospective. Some were, frankly, emotional. Some were grateful. Kind of the whole range.
He certainly was one of a kind, right? I remember, I think probably every time I ever sat in his office, I came away with something that I would end up going back and telling people stories about. And it wasn't necessarily what was in the story. It was this whole other story of the joust, right? He loved to spar. He loved to argue. He loved to poke and prod and have fun. And a lot of that came through in your story. Tell me a little bit about that. I mean, you think about his style as a commissioner. Tell me about that.
Well, his style was one of you know, he managed from a top-down perspective in some ways. Clearly, he
democracy bad, democracy bad, dictatorship good, right?
Yeah, right. That's my favorite anecdote from the stories. And, you know, he said that with sort of a wink, but, you know, he also understood that he made sure that the owners knew that he was not going to be pushed around. He was a master of consensus, right? So he made sure that he had the owners thinking his way, and whatever, he did that masterfully. And he did it in a way that obviously profited the owners greatly, grew the league greatly, certainly was able to do things that were way ahead of the curve from a business standpoint,
right,
from a marketing standpoint,
right,
from a media standpoint. So, you know, his style clearly was one of, he did love the debate. He did love, there was never a conflict that David Stern shied away from.
Right.
And he liked to put you on the defensive, and sometimes he liked to make sure you knew what you were talking about. One of the things that people who dealt with him very closely would say is you really needed to really be prepared when you went into a meeting.
That's exactly
third
right.
level. Third level, I think someone told me. Third
right.
level kind of stuff.
Or an right? interview.
And that too, right? You need to, you know, so you needed to know what you were talking about. You needed to know, whether it was in his office or whether you were interviewing him or working for him or whatever, you just need, you know, he wanted to make sure that you knew what you were talking about and that the executives working for him were prepared in meetings and knew the details and the minutiae. You know, that was a whole part, that was a big part of his style, was making sure that people were prepared and knew what they were talking about. And I think that, you know, to everybody I talked to, you know, pointed that out in one way or another.
Well, you think about from a style as a commissioner perspective, I was always intrigued by the fact that, you know, that he said jokingly, you know, the dictatorship thing. But there was a little bit of that. I mean, I don't think that in any other sport I ever you ever saw quite that, or at least in our time, saw quite that level of this is what David says and it's going to happen. And there were not a lot of, if there were fractures within our ownership, you certainly didn't hear about them. Those weren't widely debated very often. Now, certainly there were in the course of labor negotiations with the players, sure, but not from with ownership, not a whole lot of it anyway, not in a way that at all fractured or fragmented them, which I always thought was intriguing. And, you know, talking to people about it over the years, what I always heard back was there was this immense trust that if David wanted to go in a direction, that was the direction they should go. And for people who generally are in that seat themselves, it's so interesting that he was able to get them to coalesce and go along with him with very, very rare, at least in a public way, you know, resistance.
Well, you have to remember that sometimes these owners weren't out for the greater good of the league. They were out for their own franchises and themselves. And David, one of the things that he really did was, through his own style, was making sure that all these owners were moving in the direction, same direction, for the greater good of the league, right, in the game. And that is what he really did really well, is he was able to have that consensus and keep the owners not benefiting from their own interests, but for the league interest as a whole. That's hard to do, and he was great at it. And he demanded it, and his style was able to command that. And it really, that was key to growing the league. And you know, over his 30 years, I mean, the growth was just
well. That's it.
Incredible.
I mean,
no,
I think it's easy to forget what a train wreck the league was when he took it over.
Yeah, it was really well chronicled. You know, tape delay finals, half empty arenas. You know, drug use rampant among players in some areas. For example, Russ Granick, who I talked to,
yeah,
deputy commissioner, a long time Stern ally, he said, yeah, for the most part, we were solving problems, you know, not helping the league grow the early years, right? And then we got to the growth part. So there was just a tremendous amount of work he had to do just to get the league headed in the right direction and clean it up. And, you know, look, he also benefited by guys like Magic.
Yeah.
Jordan and
timing Bird is everything. Timing is everything.
Yeah.
That's what he would say.
Sure. And he also, he also knew that the players were the league's, you know, best asset.
Yes.
But he also had the vision, right? He had the ability to see around the corners, whether it was digital media or TV deals or marketing. He had that sense to go and see before others could see and understand it. Whether that's having all the leagues, you know, the league website. What did he do? He basically created the fact that there's going to be an NBA.com, right? That was so far ahead of everybody else. There's a million examples, Bill, on what he did in terms of, you know, being ahead of the curve. But that's really was one of his greatest assets in running the league, was that vision.
Well, to me, one of the real game changers, because again, there were other great commissioners and they're known for certain things, right? You know, the Pete Rozelle, known for certainly the advancing the NFL from a marketing. Pete was a PR guy, and he was great at developing the image of the league. You know, to me, Stern was he was that first commissioner that sort of crossed over and saw a league as a media and entertainment company, right? And oh, by the way, global. And he loved to say global, and he loved to say digital. You remember we used to, this even predates the magazine, right? Digital Dave. Everybody liked to say Digital Dave. And he ate that up. He ate it up because he was in, he was not just in the sports business. He saw himself then in the internet business, in the digital business, correct?
Without question. He saw himself as a CEO of a company with a global reach, a entertainment company, right? And also, Bill, we're missing the fact that he saw basketball and sports as a social benefit.
Uh-huh.
Right? He created the WNBA. There was that whole social side of what David did, right? Using sports to do good in society. That was one of his true beliefs, as far as also, you know, the international component, the media component, the entertainment component, the marketing component, also the social component.
So a lot of success, but it wasn't always the greatest of times, right? The challenges that he led this league through. Let's reflect on those a little bit.
Well, there were the work stoppages and the labor battles. There was the malice in the palace, the infamous brawl in Detroit. There was Tim Donaghy and the gambling scandal, which rocked the league. There's a Magic Johnson and his aides, and David got, you know, David took, he handled that situation, lauded for how he handled that situation in terms of handling the aides and the way that people saw aides back then and how he.
Well, there was panic. I mean, there was absolute panic around it. I remember being at my desk in that morning at a newspaper sports department, and the news broke about Magic, and you know, immediately there was this sort of uncertainty of, well, you know, never mind his health, but even beyond his health, could you safely have him play in a physical game? What if he bled? All those sort of questions. And that had been asked around athletes, around boxers, around things like that, but never around a guy who was the absolute face of the league, right? And David took this out into a larger social conversation.
Without question. What he did was he went to the top people about AIDS, right? He learned about it. He understood it. And he, far more than anybody at that time, you know, generally speaking, right? So, and he communicated that and he led that. So that obviously was one of the big challenges. And frankly, one of his successes. Bill, there's a lot of them, right? There's big and small. I think that one of the things that people told me was that that's when David was really at his best, and he never shied away from the difficult times. Almost seemed like he relished conflict in a lot of ways, but he never shied away from the league's problems. And that's what makes a really good commissioner or a good CEO of any company, right? And David could have been a great CEO of any major multinational company, I'm sure. People would tell me. Yeah, he had to deal with a lot of problems, but he never once backed away from them. You know, I think that was one of his great strengths as a commissioner.
I also always found it interesting that this guy who could joust with you also could be suddenly turned so warm. I'll always remember, you know, that there would be those times when, you know, first of all, usually if you were getting him on the phone, it would frequently be fairly late. He seemed to like to call from the car, either on his way home or on his way from a dinner or whatever it might be. And he immediately, bang, right off the bat, was gonna challenge you and make sure, to your earlier point, that you knew what you were talking about. But then once you did that, he would say, "You've got 5 minutes," and then it would be 15. And he could be entertaining and fun and all those things. Tell me a little bit about that. I know that came through as you spoke with people, that side of him.
Well, that's exactly how he was. You know, he'd call and he would complain or have an issue and say he didn't know what you were talking about, and then sort of put his jabs in and then, you know, make a joke. And one of the things, it was always, for me, some educational in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
He'd explain things and talk, go on different tangents. And, you know, I remember once he got back from India and I had to call him on something. I don't know what the issue was, but, you know, he started talking about his trip to India.
Yeah,
you know, just like, you know, what he saw and where he went, and it was you know, and how amazed he was. And I think a lot of people that I talked to who knew him really well spoke of his, you know, great desire and thirst for always learning and reading and constantly being able to address new topics. And he's a very curious guy in a lot of ways too, right? Just as a person, and that showed through in, you know, the conversations he had with people. And you know, he was just always, I think, one of his great strengths was he was always looking more outside of the issues at hand. And I think that, you know, and I think that was part of his, you know, his great vision that he had in terms of operating as an executive. Look, to me, he represents the modern day commissioner.
Yeah.
Media, digital, international, right? Dealing with these global initiatives. Don't forget, Bill, I mean, he created the WNBA, created the D League, now G League.
Right. Can't forget the global piece. And we didn't touch on that a whole lot, but that's another, you know, you think about his you know, there's certainly a brouhaha around China of late, but the NBA was nowhere in China, nowhere in India, nowhere in Europe until David Stern said, "We are global." And then it happened.
None of it was accidental. It's not an accident that a quarter of the league today is made up of international players. No one understood the dream team. We didn't even talk about the dream team, right? And how that helped I mean, we could go on for
right because hours. It would have been very easier for the commissioner of the National Basketball Association to say, "Those are our players. This is our season. Look at what the NHL's gone through. You know, that's not what we're in this. You know, this is not, and that is not the way he saw it. Right? He saw it as this great opportunity to launch this global sensation.
Look at the people who work for him and where they are now. Well, obviously Adam Silver,
right?
Gary Bettman, Val Ackerman, the list executives. Up and down the industry, Scott O'Neill, Chris Granger. I mean, there are all these people who worked for him, who he pushed. Not easy to work for David Stern, but what he did to develop talent, identify talent, mentor talent is really, I mean, it's something that I think is noteworthy in terms of his legacy as well. As we talk about international and everything he did, growing the brand and marketing, and digital, all that stuff. He was also really good at identifying, developing and mentoring executive talent. To me, that's a big part of not just a commissioner's job, but an executive's job, a chief executive's job. And look at the succession he had. There was one of the great, I think, indicators of a great executive is how he leaves, the succession plan. And that was one of David's, I think, really important efforts was the succession to Adam Silver. It just spoke to his management style and his expertise and a management standpoint.
And maybe that's his greatest legacy. I don't know. I mean, there's so many of them. I wonder which one he would choose. Because he wouldn't tell you. I'll tell you that. Because I remember asking.
He had zero interest in talking about his legacy. What? Zero.
Yeah.
No books, right? There's no Stern book. Well, what a book that would be too, right?
Yeah.
No discussion of his legacy. And by the way, look what he did when he left the NBA.
Exactly.
He retired because he did it, you know. Okay, he hated the word retirement. Look what he did when he left the NBA. Involved in all the startups. Involved in young, developing industries as a 70-something-year-old guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
That speaks volumes to how he approached his job.
It does.
And his life, actually.
It does. Well, you know, you know when someone's made an impact when it's after they're gone and you're talking about them and you're smiling. And I think we're probably both smiling right now. And I think probably everybody around the industry who's had these conversations has ended that way as well. John, thanks so much.
You're welcome, Bill.
Great job. I hope you're enjoying First Look. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to leave us a 5-star review to help others find this podcast. If you have any suggestions for the show or just want to say hello, feel free to send us an email at firstlook@sportsbusinessjournal.com. That's firstlook@sportsbusinessjournal.com. Look forward to hearing from you. And now, as we typically do to close First Look, I'll bring in our executive editor and publisher, Abe Madcore, and we'll talk a little bit about what has been certainly a moving week for many.
Yeah, it's been a tough week, Bill, and you and John hit the discussion on David Stern really well. I mean, we had David at our conference. He was in the audience for Dealmakers in Sports on December 4th, just a couple of weeks before he had the brain hemorrhage. And on, you know, New Year's Day, I'm sure like everybody, a lot of people who are listening, around 4 o'clock, my phone started to blow up. And people were just really shocked and sad. And some were very angry about the news that, you know, David had, his condition had just not improved.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was the worrisome sign that I kept hearing is that David's condition remains unchanged.
Yes.
And that wasn't a good sign.
No.
So, you know, you look back now and you think about all the influence that he's had and all the monumental decisions he's made and how I learned a lot of sports business through David Stern.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he wasn't a saint and we all know that, but you're still, you know, I'm still going to miss his counsel, his, you know, caustic nature, the way that he would always jibe and needle me and SBJ and the media as a whole. But overall, he was someone who, you know, there was just a tremendous amount of brain power and the tremendous amount of also empathy.
Mm-hmm.
And he had both. And so he was able to utilize those. And I'll just say, you know, I'll miss him. And I think about the cover shot we had in our magazine just a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And he looked so happy. Uh-huh. I know that he was having the time of his life being this influential mentor to so many people. And I knew a lot of young people, Zach Wiener, Mihir Walabakar, companies that David and John Kosner had invested in. And they were just riveted by what they were learning at the foot of David Stern. So he will be missed.
Yeah. And I, honestly, I mean, when you look back on it and think back on it, I think that David Stern's retirement as NBA commissioner, not being a retirement, the way he went out is probably the way he wanted to go out.
Might be right. You know, a couple of other things that I'm keeping an eye on. I think the NFL is going into a very interesting part of its postseason, Bill. I think their ratings, I know you used to fight with us a lot of time, and the ratings were always going to go down. You have a little comeuppance coming to you. Second straight year, ratings were strong. I'm going to flip that, though. But at the attendance level, their average attendance of 66,000 was the first time since 2005 that the figure was below 67,000. And that continued a continuing trend of attendance, not softness, but drop off. Mm-hmm. And for the people I talk to at team and league level, they're much more concerned about the in-game attendance than they are about the ratings, because their rating story for the last couple of years has been good. So I'm keeping an eye on that and see what teams will do in the offseason to continue to try to help with ticketing and making going to the game a little bit more exciting and more of an experience.
And they've got to create demand. I mean, that's the lesson of this is that the NFL hasn't been in this situation a whole lot of times, but certainly other sports have. It can be a steep decline, because what happens is once people don't know you have to have a ticket to get a ticket, that's when the whole dynamic changes. And no matter what, and regardless of how you look at the technology and StubHub and all those other things, it's all kind of still hinges around that same idea. There has to be demand, and if that softens, it's hard to get it back.
Really good point. Second thing I'm watching: have the Redskins turned a corner? Perhaps. I mean, Dan Snyder making moves that actually people applaud. I can't believe it. So for him to get rid of Bruce Allen, who I think was one of the, I'll say it, worst team presidents in all of professional sports, polarizing, divisive, I would argue that very, very just not effective. Mm-hmm. After years of ineffectiveness, good for Dan Snyder to move on from him. You and I have been in Carolina. We've seen how classy and well-respected Ron Rivera mm-hmm. is, and he is going to change that culture of that organization.
Already started. Didn't take more than a day.
Yeah, we saw what he did here in Charlotte and in the Carolinas to just have players play for him, have fans really care for him, have him and his wife, Stephanie, in the community. Mm-hmm. They're good people, and they're going to do good things. And finally, the last thing that really struck me, the Winter Classic is still a hit. And it's been going on for so many years now, and people think, oh, it's tired and it's passé and it's, you know, every year the same thing. Well, there's a reason that Gary Bettman and his colleagues want to continue to keep doing this, because of what happened at the Cotton Bowl, where more than 85,000 mm-hmm. people, and if you watched it, which I did, the energy in that place was out of control. And before the game, Mike Milbury was like, this is a party like I've never seen before.
Yeah.
So they used these as local activation celebrations. And they use these as local activation tools, and they're very, very effective. Tell me when you can get 85,000 people to watch a hockey game. They'll have great success, I think, next year in Minneapolis at Target Field, because it's a hockey mad community.
They will.
And they'll kill it. So some people say, why do they keep doing it? They keep doing it because they work, yeah, and they're good for the game.
And oh, by the way, there's some real estate on New Year's Day now. I mean, you know, if you look at college football, has seeded New Year's Day.
Yeah, I don't necessarily.
They've seeded New Year's Day. If you think about what it was,
we can talk about that in the next one. that argument came about 8 years ago. I think college football's taken some of it back. I mean, the ratings for the Winter Classic, Bill, are not big, but for a local market activation, they're still very strong.
Right. But I still think, though, is that when you think about mindshare, there is room now, because
yes,
those games are not what they were. And by the way, the volume is not there.
No,
you know, there's not two or three games at once and bridging over. It's one game, one game, one game.
That would be a better conversation for a future podcast about what to do on New Year's Day, because there's a lot of arguments about should they move the CFP to the semifinal games always on New Year's Day. But we know what that would mean for the Rose Bowl particularly. So that is a great conversation. But I disagree that they've ceded it to the NHL, because it's not like the NHL.
No, I don't mean ceded it to the NHL. I mean, there's an opportunity is what I'm saying. There is space. There's room.
Good stuff. Always good to start the year.
Thanks, man. Take care. That's going to do it for today. For Abe Madcore, John Lombardo, and our producer, Chris Mason, I'm Bill King, and this is First Look.